If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
The positive thing about people who are growing up with wine now is that they're more willing to try different things and more excited about things that are less usual. Not to use the word unusual, but less common. Yeah, which is great. And I'm getting a lot of questions about Merlot lately as well, which is fantastic.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 510. This week we feature Kim Lorello, co-owner and co-winemaker at Lorello Vineyards in Harpersfield, Ohio. Northeast Ohio has a long history of growing exceptional wine grapes, as well as a past history of growing Concord grapes. Over the years, many of the Concord vineyards have been replanted to Vitis vinifera to take advantage of the Grand River Valley AVA. Lorello Vineyards has been down that path. Kim Lorello is co-owner and co-winemaker at Lorello Vineyards in Harpersfield, Ohio, along with her husband Larry. I caught up with Kim mid-harvest on one of the last warm days of September. You can hear Kim on our Vino Lingo segment defining the term juicy. You can also hear Larry Lorello defining the term holy shit wine. And you can hear cellar master Shane Horstman defining the term Italian water. I am back in my home state of Ohio. Always good to come home and always good to talk with Ohio wineries. I am here with Kim Lorello of Lorello Vineyards in Harpersfield Township. How are you, Kim?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very good. It's a beautiful sunny day, a little chilly. Fall is in the air, but that's even better out here, isn't it?
Yes, yes. It's quite lovely when it's like this.
Harvest-wise, where are you at this point?
If it was a typical harvest, we would still be harvesting probably until mid-October. But from the past winter and spring damage, some of us are almost complete.
Is there any such thing as a typical harvest anymore?
Sometimes every 4 to 5 years, we get very lucky. Mother Nature is kind.
Well, you mentioned damage. What damage are you talking about?
In the winter, the temperature got cold enough that most of the vines either were damaged and we had to retrain them this spring, but then in the spring we also had a frost. So it was a double-sorted damage that we had. Lost about 50 to 65% of our grapes.
And I've said this a million times to our listeners, the idea of going home with 50 to 60% less of your paycheck, can you imagine what it's like to own a winery and deal with that?
Mm-hmm. It's going to be quite scary as we go through our stock and we run low, how we're going to achieve to have wine for our customers.
Well, you learn to be creative and inventive, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But operating a winery is easy. All you have to do is crush some grapes and put them into a bottle and life is good, right?
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah. We always said when Larry and I started, don't quit your day job, number one. And it definitely is, you have to have a passion for it, but it is a lot of hard work, and it's somewhat stressful. It depends on, you know, if you get good fruit from the vineyard. If you don't, a creative and great winemaker can make a vintage that wasn't so wonderful into wonderful wine.
And I'm not trying to make light, obviously, of this. This is a common joke, obviously, with most winemakers, is that there is this idea of the romance of the business, and yet it's a lot of hard work, let alone the fact, as you've already mentioned, Mother Nature will throw you curveballs when you're least expecting it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My girls always say, are you and Dad okay? Are you and Dad okay? Because during harvest, there's a lot of bickering.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And because we're of Italian descent, sometimes we get a little loud, but we get through it.
Nice. Now, Larry is your husband. I already met him out in the cellar.
Yes.
Very nice guy. Larry, if you're listening, go Browns. And just a lot of fun to see a small operation between about 4,000 and 5,000 cases?
Yes. About, 4 to 5, sometimes 6,000 cases.
Which makes it a boutique winery, which, again, something our listeners really love because it's that focus you get into really putting that love into each bottle.
Exactly.
Which brings me to the bottles that you make. Oh, my. You do a lot of different grapes. I was looking over your list. You do Cabernet Sauvignon. You do Riesling. You do a sparkling wine, which was impressive. Tell me about the grapes you're growing.
The grapes that we grow significantly on our property are Riesling, We have a little bit of Chardonnay, Vidal for ice wine, and Chamerson. The other grapes that we harvest are from wonderful growers in the Grand River Valley that didn't necessarily want to open a winery, but want to sell their grapes. So from those vineyards, we get Cab Franc, Cab Sav, Gewurztraminer, Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio.
And what is the percentage, approximately, of your estate wine?
25 to 30%.
As always, I like to go back to the beginnings of your love of wine and then to the winery itself. So did you grow up in wine? Did you find an early appreciation for it? How did it come to you?
As a young girl, my grandfather always had a red wine at the table, and during a certain time of the year would cut fresh peaches up, which would be about now, and put it in the wine. And that's how the love of wine came to me as a child, because that was our treat. We would enjoy the peaches that were soaked in the wine. As I grew up, I was into the Lambruscos and Blue Nun. And then after I met Larry and we traveled, I became to appreciate dry wines very much so.
How long have you and Larry been married?
40 years this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
The winery is 20 years
20
old
years
this year,
old.
By the way, so
yeah.
Half of it's been here.
Very yes.
Cool. Great.
Yes.
And are you a native of this part of Ohio?
I'm from South Euclid originally, and Larry was from Ashtabula, and I actually met him cleaning his teeth when I was a hygienist at Lakeland Community College. So.
Oh, cool. Interesting. Jumping into any business is not something you take lightly, let alone going into the business of being a winemaker, which is a manufacturer, a grower, a retailer, a wholesaler. Good God, all these things. How did the winery come to you?
Well, when we first started, I was still working as a dental hygienist, so I was part-time here, part-time there. But then when we saw how much time it took us, I retired after 33 years and became full-time here at the winery. It started out, starting with the foods that we prepare and have for the customers to pair with the wines, working in the cellar, selling at the retail counter. So it's a constant when you own your own business. There's really never a peaceful time. But my daughter, Jennifer, has jumped on board with us, and we have a wonderful team here. I am so blessed to have the team that I have here. And so hopefully now I can maybe slow down just a little bit and enjoy those grandbabies and take it easy a little bit. But very blessed.
Yeah. You did this 20 years ago, but going into that, I mean, you just don't open one day and decide to open a winery.
No. Larry was making wine in our basement, and he is in railroad construction, and he was out of town. And all of a sudden, I'm in the kitchen, and a plethora of fruit flies are coming through the vents. And I'm thinking, what is going on? I go downstairs, and the wine is fermenting and blowing out of the tanks. And he calls, and I'm like, how are you? And I'm like, I'm not very good. He said, honey, be patient. It has to do its thing. I said, Larry, it's time to take this out of our basement and move it someplace else. So we decided to open a winery. The farm was purchased in 1993. And then in 2002, Larry and I opened the winery. It was very small, and we've expanded the patio and such. But we started our little cantina in 2002.
Very nice. How many acres do you farm here?
It used to be 85 acres, but we have since pulled out the Concord grapes, so the vinifera grapes that we have on site are about 5 acres.
Let's talk about the Concord grapes. I've talked to a number of wineries over the years out here, and many of them came from Concord grapes because when Welch's was out here, contracts, that sort of thing. I'm assuming you weren't into the contract thing with any buyer at that time, or how did that work out?
We were in contract with Welch's. What had happened is, as each year passed and as costs increased, as you know, the payment from them did not go up. So in Northeast Ohio, with the weather and everything, the spraying cost was higher, the chemicals to keep those grapes healthy was higher. So your net profit at the end, you were actually taking a loss. Mm. So we couldn't do that anymore. We had done that for almost 18 years. So the family who owns the whole entire property decided to pull those out.
Very good. Well, as I said before, I wanted to talk about some of the wines you're making here. So the grapes that were being grown, the Concord grapes, was never something you would have ever considered for wine, I'm assuming.
No, we did.
Oh, you did.
One of our sweet blends, our Nazaroso, has Concord in it. So we did start, and we continue to do that. We just get the Concord from another vineyard. Because it's, you know, it's a sweet staple wine that a lot of our sweet wine drinkers really appreciate. They like that jammy, flavor from the Concord grape. But, you know, it's a Lambrusco. It's not a vinifera. So we try to hang our hat on the vinifera varietals.
Sure. It's almost kind of ironic that you're actually buying grapes for Concord grapes at this point after getting rid of them. Yeah, well, this is how it happens. You're making sparkling wine as well, which is really interesting. Many wineries are getting into that, but of course there's a big cost associated with that because I'm assuming you're not producing everything. You're not doing the final work for the wine here, or are you?
Correct. We have a friend in Maza Vineyards, and we prepare the still wine for him, take it there, and then he sparges the CO2 in it for us. The special wine that is the sparkling that we first initially did was our Loving Linda after my sister. It's a wine that supports breast cancer research.
Very nice.
So a certain percentage of those profits go to making strides for breast cancer research. The second one is Mia, and it's a blend of white wine that is in honor of our godchild. And so we have two, and my granddaughter, my youngest granddaughter, her name is Mia. So those two are very well appreciated, and our customers really seem to enjoy them.
And the kids get in on the act.
Yes, they do.
They like that. That's very cool. Curious, though, about how many cases are you doing of the sparkling, roughly?
The sparkling Pinot Noir, we did about 60 cases, and then the Mia was a smaller 40 cases.
So it's a little more special because there is so little of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When you first got into that, how did that go over with your regulars that come here? Was that something they wanted to jump into right away?
Or? Absolutely.
Yeah, really?
Yes. It was released, the Pinot Noir Rosé was released in the summer, so it really took off. And our still Pinot Noir Rosé really does real well. That also goes to making strides for breast cancer research. So, you know, you had some special events. People would call ahead. They're planning an anniversary party. They enjoyed that. They would have that chilled, ready when their guests came. Some people bought it for their weddings. And some ladies and gentlemen just enjoyed a bottle here.
Very nice. Well, it's great to be able to offer those kind of options to people.
And, absolutely.
And sparkling has grown so much over the years. And even men are starting to drink it, aren't they?
Yes, they are, especially the dry.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of ours are brut.
And, of course, you do a still rosé as well.
Absolutely.
And what's that made from?
Pinot Noir.
Nice.
And personally, Larry and I both think that Pinot Noir is a very finicky grape, and in Northeast Ohio, every 4 to 5 years you'll get a good vintage of Pinot Noir. We feel that the Pinot Noir grape should be used just for rosé.
Oh, really?
You can do a very nice job with that.
So at this point, are you making a Pinot then? I know I'm kind of going backwards there a bit.
Our last Pinot was made in 2019, and it's very nice. It's light-bodied, very food-friendly.
So you're being very specific about it when you grow it as to its purpose.
For sure, especially, you know, with the weather conditions, whatever Mother Nature gives us.
Sure. And again, this is the Grand River Valley AVA, a wonderful area, but well known for very good Pinot Noir. And I'm saying that because I've tasted it.
Yes. One of the best Pinot Noirs that I've ever tasted from the Grand River Valley came from St. Joseph's Vineyard.
Yeah. And we were just talking about St. Joseph's for our listeners. We interviewed them, probably about 8 years ago. And at the time, currently they have sold. So who knows, maybe down the road we'll get to meet the new owner and see what they've decided
Absolutely.
To do with the property. Yeah. Interesting for me, before I came here, I always like to tool around the neighborhoods before I get to where I'm going and just to see what's what. And I've seen a couple of vineyards that have just gone to seed. And boy, that hurts me when I see that. Is that just simply a matter of people have gotten out of the business? Around here,
I think most of those are probably old Concord vineyards.
Oh, okay. Didn't even occur to me to think about that.
Yeah, most probably. And yet, you know, with COVID and everything, that really hit the wine industry because we couldn't get our supplies as readily as we wanted to. So if you're really, really small, you know, that could put you out of business just like that.
Yeah. Well, and that's a small business's, problem is that you've got to depend on all kinds of different vendors and suppliers in the long run.
Absolutely. I mean, we were very behind with bottling because we couldn't get bottles in. We couldn't get our filters in. And when we did get our filters in, they were 3 times the cost. You're going to see a lot of us increasing our bottle price come 2023 just because we have to. Trucking has gone up. Food has gone up. You know, everything has gone up. So in order for the business to survive, that's what we have to do.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate thing. This is the time we're living in, and hopefully we'll see maybe things smooth out a little bit. But you talked about trucking, especially from the point of view of gas shipping and what COVID caused in the supply chain. Once again, you're looking at this and then not having people come here to taste. Oy, I mean, what were you feeling at that time?
Well, during COVID, we were very blessed. Customers still came out. We made it a very safe environment for them. And our back patio was so large and wide, we were able to socially distance everyone. So they were very grateful for that. We were very fortunate. We had a lot of to-go orders. Our online store was put into place by my daughter. So we really were very blessed.
That's great. And that's part of what it is to be a family operation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You introduced me, as I've already said, to Larry, your husband, who at the time I said, who's specifically the winemaker, and you said you, Larry, and Shane. And so kind of an interesting situation to have three different winemakers, because that could create some debate, I would imagine.
No, it's a collaborative act at Lorello Vineyards. We really enjoy the different views when we look at a wine. And in perspective, if you give your opinion on the wine and collaboratively put that together, I think it makes a more creative wine in the bottle.
I'm just curious, when you get into a blending, Shane and Larry were doing a little bit of tasting. I assume, I don't know if this was barrels.
Yes.
There still is this difference in palates. And I don't care who you are, you're never going to agree 100%. So coming to that consensus has got to be a challenge. And I don't mean from an argumentative point of view, a point of selling the wine.
The most important thing with a good winemaker is having a good nose and a good palate, as you said. Mm. Larry has both. Shane has both. I have both. So sometimes, as a woman, you're picking up different things. I don't know if it's our hormones or what. As far as the men, it's quite unique to hear what they both have to say. We write it on paper, we put it together, and then it collaboratively comes together.
That's great. How long has Shane been with you?
Shane has been with us not very long, approximately maybe 6 months now, on 6 months. We were very fortunate. He was in the winemaking industry prior to this with Klingshire Winery, and then he worked at some of the other local wineries here. Went into a factory, working in a factory, and said, this is not what I want to do. My love is for wine.
Yeah.
He knows the viticulture part of it, the enology, the winemaking, and we learned together. I mean, I never took one course in winemaking. I read, and it was practical experience. We've had a lot of help through OSU and Kent State University, which we collaboratively have wines that we do with the students at Kent State University. So, and also our neighbors. If we have a question, Nick Ferrante has been an exceptional neighbor. Matt Meineke has helped us harvest. So we help one another, because this is a destination point. If it's a good area to visit, everyone profits.
And Matt, I interviewed, geez, probably been about 6 years ago, in fact, because we had talked about getting together on this trip. Brilliant guy, and really knows what he's doing over there at M. Sellers.
Absolutely.
It's great to have him as a neighbor as well as an aide when you need it.
Absolutely. Tony Kosicek. I mean, we're all this little family here, you know, and it really works out well.
Clearly, I've interviewed all the cool people here.
Yes, absolutely.
Sorry, couldn't resist. You know, you're talking about what I would say receptors in terms of women maybe having a little bit of a different approach to making wine. They say women have more taste receptors, true or not.
Our senses are heightened, I think.
It seems to be. Mm-hmm. And there are a great many more women in the wine business. But you had mentioned off camera a second ago, both you and Tracy Huntley, who each we interviewed fairly recently, are the only women winemakers around here. That's surprising to me.
And I think maybe Laurentia had a woman, and I don't know if she's still there for a short time. But, it's kind of cool.
It's very cool, because certainly a business that was made up of largely men for the longest time, women can do this, but it's I guess, like anything else, you have to get into it and prove yourself as an individual. It has nothing to do with your sex. It's simply a matter of, I can do this and I know what I'm doing. I've met brilliant women winemakers. It's not about that. It's about your qualifications, your palate, your taste, that kind of thing.
And you can learn a great deal from going to school, but I think the practical experience that you get on a daily basis, going through the faults and the successes really helps make a better winemaker.
Yeah, I understand that. Now, for you, in a family business, I mean, after coming through COVID, this would be almost like a silly question, but what freaks you out the most? I mean, is it weather? Is it just simply a matter of what's going on locally, the world?
As far as the winery is concerned, I think all of those play a part in it, but your marketing is very important. Our daughter, Jennifer, has done an immense job with our marketing, pulling customers in, because, you know, there's quite a bit of competition now. So you have to be unique. You have to be special. You have to treat customers with a special touch. And I think at Lorello's, we've always done that. You know, we always say, where old friends gather and new friends meet. That's our little logo.
There is a lot more competition out here, which, you know, theoretically, of course, the cream rises to the top. But that competition really helps everybody in general to get more visitors out this way, which is does very well as it is.
Yes, that can be like a double sword also. The more you have here, the less pie to share. Mm. So that's why you have to be unique and entice the customer to come in, taste your wines, tell the story. They love the stories. They love to hear about, you know, how you started, what makes you special. And I just think being patient and kind to one another, that's a lost art that needs to come back, and we've always done that with our customers.
It's hospitality. It's such a big deal, and we miss that these days, it seems. Although I think the wine industry is its own pioneer when it comes to hospitality by simply being that friendly. Who's not friendly when they're around a glass of wine?
You know, I tell the servers, when someone comes through that door and they maybe are rough around the edges, it's part of your job to soften the edges. Maybe they're having a bad day. Be kind. Give them something they desire. Take them through that journey so when they leave, they have a smile on their face.
As it should be. That's great. Do you have a wine club here as well?
Not really. We have a loyalty club. And for every dollar that everyone spends here at Lorello Vineyards, they get a point. And then they get certain perks. They get certain messages for different events we have first. So it's a nice little club we have.
That's great. I want to backpedal to the wines. We were talking before about Montepulciano, which is one of my favorite wines. And you're sourcing those grapes elsewhere, is that correct?
Correct. We had a friend in Temecula who told us of a vineyard that was growing Montepulciano, and he didn't have an exit for it. So over 4 years ago, the first year we got the grapes. We didn't even have to pay for the grapes themselves. We paid for the shipping to come here. And we made a very lovely wine. So then we became into contract with them for 3 years. Well, in so doing, the owner sold the vineyard to someone else. So he honored that, and this is our last year with them. So we usually get the grapes, they're usually crushed and decemed, and then on a refrigerated truck, they cold soak the whole journey to Ohio. They warm up here, we pitch our yeast, and we begin the journey of the winemaking here.
That's great. That's fun you're able to do something like that. So a lot of people look at wines in different markets other than the typical Napa, Sonoma, Oregon, whatever it might be. Can you age Ohio wines?
You can if you have a good growing season. I think it just depends on when the fruit comes in, is it going to have the stability of the tannins, the structure to allow it to age? And I think, you know, we've cellared some of our wines that we started in 2002, and some of them have aged very well. They say after 10 years, though, you have to change the cork out. Those that are using screw tops, great, you know, that's very expensive. Machinery, we still use the corks, and I love the sound, the, you know.
Who doesn't? You do that very well.
Yeah. but I think on those good years, you can age a good red wine. Whites, you should drink your white wines. They're better when they're fresh, they're young.
Yeah, and that makes a great deal of sense. You're not doing anything in screw tops at this point?
No, everything is cork.
And so when I came in, I noticed you had your own bottling line, which isn't super common at a lot of wineries out here, because many people will do the bottling truck line, but you were going to comment about that.
Yeah, I think Matt Meinecke does the bottling truck line. Some of the smaller vineyards even have volunteers, which we did at first also. We had a group of volunteers, about 15 people would come in, we'd hand bottle everything, then I'd make a wonderful meal, we'd enjoy a meal together, they'd go home with the bottle that we were bottling at that time. But we were fortunate enough, Gervasi had grown enough that they were getting a larger bottling line, and they were selling there, so Larry and I made an investment and purchased the line. And it's a wonderful tool, but just like anything else, little things go wrong. So
right.
It's quite entertaining when we bottle.
Yeah, I can imagine. And that's not always something everybody enjoys because it can be so loud.
Loud and frustrating.
Yeah, I'll bet. Now, when I met Matt Meineke, we were talking about that he has a automated harvesting unit. Are mm-hmm. you using something like that, or are you harvesting by hand? How are you doing that?
Some of his harvest by hand. Most of it Matt will pick with his harvester and help us out in that way. This year, very minimal, because we had a very minimal crop.
Sure.
So,
do you see it going more that way? I mean, obviously it'll depend on the vintage, but being more mechanical versus hand-picked?
It just depends on the variety. If you want to be real gentle with some of your reds, we'll hand-pick still.
Yeah, that's fair to say. So other than Ohio wines, what do you like to drink?
I love a good Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand. I like a nice Pinot Noir from Oregon. You know, Larry and I talk about that all the time. If you just drink your wines, you achieve a cellar palate. And that means you taste other wines from different areas, other vineyards, and you think, oh, that's not what it should taste like. So you really should taste all the time from other areas. I think that educates your palate.
Mm.
You can see what other appellations are achieving. And you enjoy wine much more.
Drink more wine, that's
mm-hmm.
what I say.
Yeah, I really enjoy drinking wine with food. That's the way it should be.
Sure.
Our family is from Italy, and we love our wine and food from our Italian region. And, I mean, even our grandchildren taste a little bit of wine. And I think that's very important. I think in the long run, as they become adults, they don't...
Well, there's not this big mystique
right.
where you get so curious.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a big deal. A lot of Europeans do this, where they'll a little bit of water in there, that kind of
mm-hmm.
thing.
And dunking the bread. And
yeah. I read once where Robert Mondavi said that his mom used to put a little bit of red wine in his espresso, and I'm like, oh, dear God.
Goodness.
Yeah. I don't know what that would do. You would, like, wake up, run around, fall asleep.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Know. You know, Kim, I'm sure you've done plenty of interviews in media over the years and been asked a billion questions here in the winery, but I ask all my winemakers this question, and it's a bit of a challenge, so you can think about it for a moment if you like, but what's the one question that you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
What finally made me decide to journey alongside my husband in the winemaking business?
I'm not quite sure you really covered that, but what would that be?
My father taught us at a young age, when you get married, it's a partnership. And you decide together to take the journey together. And so that's what I decided. There were times where I was like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? There were times, because we used our family name, Lorello, I was very, very proud and very meticulous on the decisions we made, because we also wholesale some of our wines. And when your name's out there, you have to make sure that it's a good product. So my dad taught us that. I love my husband. It's quite obvious. 40 years of marriage. Is everything perfect? No, absolutely not. But our journey has been a wonderful one, and I'm glad I took this journey with him.
That's a very good answer. Thank you for that. Well, most importantly for our listeners, we're here in this very, very cool tasting room. Really nice property here. Is this a walk-in tasting room? Do people need to make an appointment? How does that work here?
Most people that come in just walk in, and we take care of them. If it's a large bus that's coming in, we ask them to be considerate and call us ahead, just so that we can have the appropriate staff on hand so that their experience is a wonderful one.
Good. That's a good way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And for our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit more about you, what is your website?
www.LorelloVineyardsWithAnS.com.
Very good. Kim, this has been a real pleasure meeting you. Thank you for taking the time with me today.
The pleasure is mine also. Thank you.
Learn more at LorelloVineyards.com. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at LifeBetweenTheVines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel.
You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our web geek is Dan Gisha. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2022.